again, and welcome to the final Musings on Sports episode for calendar year 2022. I'm Kelly Elbin, along with Bob Bupka. Bob, Happy New Year. Happy New Year to you. Happy New Year to all of our listeners. You know, for a startup podcast, Bob, we got things going in March. We stuck to our mission of being a platform for great storytelling. It's been a lot of fun being with you, partner.
Yeah, it really has. And when I think of the quality of guests that were kind enough to join us on Musings, it really is incredible. And I'm excited about 2023.
Yeah, and today we're going to have an encore interview, and it was actually our very first interview with Jim Nantz, the great voice of CBS Sports. Jim was our very first guest back in March, and since then, as you mentioned, Bob, he's been followed by the likes of Jimmy Roberts and Bob Ryan and Ian Eagle and John Feinstein and Tim Kirkjian. We threw in a little Archie Manning and Steve Spurrier on the football side and Rick Barry on the basketball side. And then we closed it out with David Marinus, who just an incredible author, his new book on Jim Thorpe. And then the ridiculously funny conversation that you had bedside with Rick Riley and talking about his new golf book. It was a most interesting 2022. How you feeling, by the way? How's the recovery coming?
Well, let's clarify a little bit. Bedside.
Yeah.
I wasn't laying in my bed. I was in a darn hospital bed because I had fallen and broken my hip.
Right.
But my excitement to talk to Rick Riley, because I've known him for a long time and I really admire his talent. I thought it was going to be a success. Well, it's probably the best medicine I got while I was in the hospital is that interview. When I listened back, I was laughing at myself laughing. So if you haven't heard it yet, make it a point to pick up the one with Rick Riley. I think it'll bring a little smile to your face and a chuckle to your midsection.
No question about it. And I think you and I both learned that what we thought going in, that there were a lot of great stories out there to be told, was exactly the case. And we learned a lot more. I mean, I was touched. I still remember Janice, our executive producer, being touched by Lieutenant Colonel Dan Rooney and his stories having to do with Patriot Golf Days and you know, the military's involvement with golf. So, you know, storytelling is, yeah, it's about sports, of course. That's in our name, but you know, it touches lives in so many ways. That's what sports, when it's really great, Bob, it touches lives.
Well, when it's all boiled down, it's humans that are involved in sports, and everyone, no matter what endeavor they excel at, you know, if they're a great baseball player, they have other things in their lives, a football player with other things. And we tried to get to some of those other things so that after listening to Musings, our listeners had a better understanding of our guests because they were kind enough to open up and share intimate stuff with us, which was quite fascinating.
Yeah, and I'm looking forward to 2023. Just heard from a guy by the name of Tyler Kepner, who is the baseball writer for the New York Times. Tyler has written a new book on the World Series. My son Ryan actually gave a copy of it to me for my birthday. And Tyler's going to be joining us in January, one of our really good guests to kick off the new year. But hey, Bob, let's take a minute and look at 2022. And you and I, you know, hey, our careers have been in golf. And you know, when you look back at the big stories of 22, you know, I think you can go in a lot of directions, but I don't think, for me at least, I don't think I'm being biased in saying that LIV Golf and its impact on professional golf and taking a number of very well-known names from the PGA Tour over to this startup that's been funded by the Saudis, with Phil Mickelson and Dustin Johnson and Bryson DeChambeau and Sergio Garcia, and then Cameron Smith not too long after he won the Open Championship going over there. I can't think of a story that had a bigger impact in sports than LIV Golf and what it's really upended golf in so many ways in 22.
Well, I think you're right, and I know you're going to ask me my top sports story of 2022, and it's along the same lines, but It hasn't had the full ramifications yet, but that announcement by Fred Ridley, head of Augusta National and the Masters, saying that LIV players would be eligible to play in the Masters, ultimately may very well prove to be the biggest sports story of 2022.
Because it doesn't, because by the choices that those guys made in jumping to LIV, that is, at least in the short term, is what you're saying, it's not preventing them from being able to play in what is the biggest of the four majors. Is that where you're going?
Absolutely. And of course, the other two majors that are automatically are going to let LIV players participate just by their nature, the United States Open and the Open Championship. The one remaining non-commitment thus far, the PGA of America and the PGA Championship, I would be surprised. Matter of fact, take that back. I'd be shocked if the PGA of America were to take a stance and say, no LIV players. I just don't think they would want to weaken their field by taking that position.
You and I are in 100% agreement on that. The college sports landscape, Bob, to me, in so many ways, was a monster story in 2022. You know, even if you just looked at USC and UCLA announcing that they're going to be joining the Big Ten, a traditional Midwest conference, now you've got two teams from the West Coast. Even if you look at Texas and Oklahoma announcing that they're going to be bolting the Big 12 to join the SEC in a couple of years, those in and of themselves are huge. But the decision to expand the college football playoffs to 12 teams, which was recently announced, I think it's a good decision. I think four is not quite enough. 12 makes a lot of sense. But the transfer portal and players coming and going, I thought it was almost laughable. There's a quarterback at Coastal Carolina, Grayson McCall. He's a good player. Grayson McCall got hurt the other night in the Birmingham Bowl on one of the last plays of the game. Well, Grayson McCall has been the quarterback there, but he actually entered the transfer portal, essentially saying, I'm leaving, and yet stayed with the program, played quarterback for Coastal Carolina in that bowl game. That's kind of, to me, the wild, wild west, the chaotic nature of college sports, the name, image, and likeness of unbelievably large sums of money that are being tossed at the likes of Arch Manning to get him to go to play at the University of Texas as their quarterback. The money's, it concerns me, Bob, too. The money's concern me. The gambling concerns me in that it's just become so commonplace. And I do wonder if at some point we go down a rabbit hole that could really do some damage in a lot of ways. I don't know exactly what it is when it comes to it, but I know there's so much money at stake.
Well, money is the root of all evil. I think I've heard that before. And, you know, for so many years, you would never even hear of a player switching colleges. And if you did hear of one, it was like a huge story. Now it's almost commonplace. They get up in the morning and they say, well, I might want to go play for Notre Dame. I might want to go play for USC. And because of this portal, which I don't understand, they're allowed to do so. And now, to conclude 2022, we're having, as you said, teams that are switching. You know, USC and UCLA headed to the Big Ten. Texas, why in God's name would Texas want to go into the SEC? One reason, money.
Yeah, no question about it. Same with Oklahoma. And, you know, also, I know you and Janice are big World Cup fans, and for Messi and Argentina to win the World Cup, I think we would be overlooking that if we didn't mention that. You know, I think sometimes we get a little parochial here in the States and maybe lose a picture on just how massively big the World Cup is. But that was an incredible triumph for Argentina, and one that he had been looking forward to try to get for a long time. And their victory over France, I mean, Bob, that you talk about an instant classic. It sounds like maybe, you know, the greatest football/soccer game ever played.
Yeah, and I think it's going to go down in history. You know, soccer hasn't been that big here in the United States. I think it took giant leaps with this year's World Cup, but there's little question that the biggest sports story of the year was Argentina winning that, and Messi finally winning a World Cup. I mean, good golly, Miss Molly, one of the greatest, maybe the greatest player ever to play the game, never had the satisfaction of that ultimate championship, but now he does. And there were millions and millions and millions of people glued to their TV sets for that entire World Cup. That was an unbelievable sporting event.
Final note on my end, and that's the University of Georgia. I don't want to overlook them at all. They finally got that that monkey off the back, if you will, and the Dogs prevailed in the college football championship in 2022. And as we talked the week between Christmas and New Year's, they're headed into the NCAA Final Four essentially for football once again. I think they've got a great chance to repeat as national champions. Hey, we lost a lot of influential people in the world of sports in 2022, Bob. Kathy Whitworth, who I know you knew, who won at 88 events, more professional tour events than anyone else, man or woman, passed away on Christmas Eve. Franco Harris, you know, Franco passing away just a couple days before the 50th anniversary of his Immaculate Reception was a loss that I know really hurt those in Western Pennsylvania who've held him so dear for so long. Bill Russell, my gosh, as great an NBA player as ever played the game. Mike Leach, the very, very charismatic and outstanding coach at Mississippi State who passed away unexpectedly. Great hockey players, Mike Bossy, Guy Lafleur, tremendous. But the one that still, to me, resonates, Bob, because of the connection he had for so many years with those who always heard him talk about Dodger baseball, is Vin Scully. And he lived a long life. And I know, you know, I think when you put it, those who've passed away in 22, I think probably him more than anyone else is going to be missed by the most amount of people.
The only blessing we have, we'll have opportunities to hear the work of Vince Scully. I mean, just listening to his old broadcast and whatnot, and boy, oh boy, talk about a legend, talk about a talent, talk about devoted, talk about being revered. Vince Scully had all of that and then some.
Well, and talk about being revered, again, I'm really excited to play once again the interview that you and I conducted all the way back in March with Jim Nance. And, what he said then is just as apropos now. He talked a lot then about the NCAA tournament. He talked about the Masters and all that that's meant to him. And the fact that that 51, not necessarily his 50th Masters, but his 51st Masters was the one is the one he's trying to get to for reasons that that people will hear once again. So looking forward to having Jim. He's the most amazing guy, isn't he, in terms of his versatility and the accomplishments he's had behind the mic, whether basketball, golf, football. I mean, Jim Nance he's at the top of the mountain, isn't he?
Oh, most definitely, and one of the nicest guys you'll ever meet. As long as I've been in this business, I'm proud to say that Jim was a friend of mine. And one thing that make note of during the NCAAs this year, when you listen to the marvelous work of Jim Nance, this is going to be his final NCAA final. And, you know, he's going to move on. He's still going to do football. Obviously, he's still going to do the Masters. Right. But he's not going to be doing NCAA basketball. But he certainly has left his mark on collegiate basketball.
Yeah, and they've already made their determination that Ian Eagle, who also joined us this past year, will be replacing him and calling the final four games for CBS and the other networks involved. Well, we'll be able to hear once again from our good friend Jim Nance here on Musings on Sports right after this from Titleist.
Your most important shot is the one you're about to hit. And whether it's the first drive of the day, a difficult approach from a tight lie, or a bunker shot to save par, you need to know your golf ball will perform exactly the way you need it to. Superior performance on every type of shot. It's why the majority of the world's best players choose the Pro V1 or Pro V1X, and why you should too.
Well, we'd like to welcome in our first guest on our very first podcast. You know, Bob, March Madness tips off this week, and with that begins quite a sports odyssey, from basketball's greatest event all the way through to golf's grandest stage. I can't think of anyone better to talk about it than the longtime lead play-by-play announcer for CBS Sports, Jim Nance. Jim, welcome to Musings on Sports.
Well, Kelly, it's great. We've known each other for a long time, and I'm honored to be on podcast number one with you and Bob, who's another longtime friend. Bob and Janice were out on the PGA Tour every week for years, working hard, talking to the best players in the sport, and I'm just honored to be on with you two.
Well, Mr. Bufka, I know that relationship goes both ways.
Well, it certainly does. Jim's been a class act for the longest time, and you know, before we get into all the other stuff, I woke up in the middle of the night and I said, boy, I have to ask Jim this. You know, your options are you can cover another Final Four, you can cover a Masters, you can cover a Super Bowl. Which of those would you choose, Jim? Do you have a preference?
Well, I have a stock answer, which I'll dispense with, but since I'm talking to two buddies, I'm going to give you the real answer from the heart. The stock answer is the NFL, college basketball, and golf, and their three biggest events, the Masters, the Final Four, and the Super Bowl. Which one do I love the most? Well, I'm a father of three. It's like asking a father, which child do you love the most? It's impossible. Okay, that's my stock answer. My real answer is deep inside of my heart, the Masters is always number one for me. Did I just say that publicly for the first time? I think I did. But that's how I feel. The Masters was the draw for me as a young boy. It inspired me to want to be in this business one day. And I have Augusta on the brain 365. So I love all of these events. I truly do. And I truly love all my children the same. But I do, as far as my professional side, love the Masters just a little bit more.
Well, you'd be amazed to hear this. I'm asked all the time if I can only do one event, which one would it be? And my public answer is the Open Championship. I think it's just the greatest. But in reality, I say, well, there's four things: the Masters, the Super Bowl, the NCAA, and the Open Championship, and the party that Jim Nance has at Pebble Beach during the Pebble Beach Pro-Am each and every year. If I could be at that one, that's my number one desire.
You're my first invitee for next year, Bob. You guys are on the new list, that's for sure. I love that event, too.
I'm leaving right now. I'm going to sit outside your door for a year.
Come on by. I'll give you the gate code. Yeah.
Hey, Jim, when you wrap things up with the championship game at the Final Four and head to Augusta, when you get to Magnolia Lane, are the butterflies still there a little bit when you drive up, even though it's been so many years you've been the lead announcer?
If it's possible, Kelly, I enjoy it incrementally just a little bit more every year. I don't know how that's possible, but like here we are now, 3 weeks out, and I'm just getting all super excited and just dreaming of being there. Now, in the meantime, I've got 12 basketball games to call between now and Augusta, including six this week, three next week at the regionals, and three at the Final Four. So I want to enjoy the ride. I want to live in the present. And I do know, though, in the back of my mind, that on that Tuesday, I'm going to roll into town on April the 5th, and I'm going to have this sudden jolt of energy just overtake me. And I'm getting set for another glorious week of calling the event that, as a young boy, I can only dream of, hoping one day I could be one of the voices of that tournament.
Well, and as we sort of segue into the NCAA men's basketball tournament and the excitement that you share for it, this will be your 36th year of being the lead announcer for CBS Sports, so for calling the Final Four and the championship game. And while we're going to reminisce a bit and go down memory lane, I've got to think, Jim, that like so many, you've got to be thrilled to get back to full arenas and to get back to regional sites. And in some way that the NCAA tournament is getting back to what it was before we all went through the very difficult times, and they continue for many of COVID.
Well, the reality is that when COVID first hit America and we realized we had a huge enemy to take on, the first sports casualty of the pandemic was the NCAA tournament of 2020.
Right.
They got taken off the books. And everybody was able to adapt later on, given some time, all the way through having the Masters competed in November of 2020, having the Super Bowl in February of 21 with just a partial crowd, those health workers who had already been immunized, and it's just hard to believe now with the NCAA tournament just about to get underway that it's been since 2019 that we had what we know as the NCAA tournament. Last year we were in Indianapolis. I was there for 27 days calling the Big Ten tournament, calling the NCAA tournament, all the various rounds of it with just extremely partial crowds, not allowed to leave my hotel room because of CBS health and safety protocols, having all my meals delivered to my door, only leaving to go call the games, and like I said, being there for the better part of a month. So now here we are on the precipice of getting it started again with full stadiums, full excitement. And, you know, the crowd really does make college basketball. The energy that you get from the crowd is just you can't describe it. So what we have waiting for us down in New Orleans when we get there in 2 weeks, we'll have 70,000 people inside the dome waiting to scream their lungs out with all the passion and energy that they can muster. And I'm just thrilled by that. And then the next week, the Masters is going to feel somewhat normal for the first time, from that November unattended Masters for patrons to last year with just whatever it was, I don't know the exact head count, 5,000 to 10,000 people. It's going to be a different scene and vibe. And I am just thrilled to have all that straight ahead.
Do you have any favorite moments, Jim, over the course of your career at the NCAA tournament? I know one of certainly working with Bill Raffey is quite a treat. I mean, he's a legend in his own right. But when you think back, anything jump out at you?
Oh, there's a lot that jumps out at me. I had an 18-year run with Billy Packer. Billy just recently celebrated his 80th birthday. I love the guy. And Bill Raftery, we've been calling the Final Four since 2015 with Grant Hill. So we have a three-man booth, a great three-way friendship, and it's just a ton of fun. It's a lot of preparation. It's a lot of getting to know teams that you might not be familiar with that have made it to the NCAA tournament, but the whole process is a joyride. Now, you're probably talking more specifically about some of the games that stood out. And my goodness, I could go through it year by year, but a few things that pop into mind. You know, I had those Duke back-to-back national championships during the Grant Hill, Christian Laettner, Bobby Hurley days of 91 and 92. That was an amazing time for the game. And really, when I go back to the 90s, you realize that a lot of players stayed in school longer, and some were four-year players, like Grant. Grant played all 4 years. A player that has today Grant's talent, you get him for 1 year, and we got Grant for 4 years. So it's different. The teams back then had more firepower because they had more continuity and more stars staying on board for a long time. But, you know, I think back to the championship game I really enjoyed most recently was in 2016. 2016 in Houston, and there was a shot at the buzzer that Villanova hit to take the title over North Carolina, and that was a thrill.
Jim, has there been one of the teams since you started? I believe you started in 1990 with Billy in Denver when UNLV beat Duke that year. Has there been one team over that period of time that stood out at the top of the mountaintop, maybe kind of the best of all the NCAA championship winners to you?
Well, there was a Kentucky team that won the championship in 96, and they were just loaded with the guys that made their way on to the NBA. Rick Pitino was the coach, and again, that kind of backs up my point from earlier. You know, these were teams that had gelled and had the longevity of building something special through 4 years and over 100 games together. The Duke team, though, that had in 92 that repeated, our last repeat national champion. I mean, you think of Christian Laettner, who was an Olympian and one of the most decorated collegiate basketball players of all time. Yeah. And Bobby Hurley, who was a first-round draft pick also, who had his career, unfortunately, as a player cut short because of an accident. And then you had Grant Hill, who was the third overall pick in the draft, and he had a lingering foot issue. Otherwise, I think a lot of people thought he was on his way to being in that upper echelon with Michael Jordan, eventually what Kobe Bryant would be. I mean, Grant had real rare, rare talent. And that was an amazing team, the one that went back-to-back beat in the championship game, the Fab Five of Michigan.
Yeah.
And, that was an exciting time for the game, the first team to field five freshman starters, and they made it all the way as freshmen to the championship game before Duke beat them by 20 in the final, only to see Michigan come back in 93 and go against Dean Smith's North Carolina team. And the game was coming down to the wire, and as you'll recall, Michigan took a timeout that it did not have. They were out of timeout with about 10 seconds to go, and North Carolina hit the free throws off the technical and won the championship. So, man, there have been so many fabulous memories. In 2010, Duke played in Indianapolis in the championship game against Butler. Butler being a mid-major in a school that was only 6.2 miles from the center of campus to Lucas Oil Stadium. And just this matchup of the giant program against the little guy, and Gordon Hayward put up a shot at the buzzer right in front of me. I was calling the game with Clark Kellogg, and I had a great ride with Clark through the years calling games after Billy. And you could tell as soon as it left his hand, we had the angle on it, that it was right on line. And it ended up probably 47 feet, being 1/4 of an inch too high off the glass. Otherwise, it would have been the greatest game ender in the history of college basketball, maybe even in sport, to hit a half-court heave to win a national championship. It was as close as you could get.
Yeah, a little Hinkle Fieldhouse where they played, as you said, just down the street, was quite a contrast from playing in that dome and that program, and how far he took that program to get to that point against Duke.
That was Brad Stevens, the coach, and they ended up being in the championship game the following year too, and lost to UConn down in Houston in 2011. But yeah, that Butler program was rooted in a foundation there that was very Hoosiers-like from the movie days of Gene Hackman and the Milan High School story and old Hinkle Fieldhouse. And one of the thrills for me last year during the doldrums of being stuck in a hotel room, not being able to leave but to go call games because of the pandemic, and having to spend a better part of a month in one city with only allowed to go out to broadcast. So I did get to go call games from Hinkle, and that was a thrill. I mean, Billy Rapp and Grant and I called a handful of games from Hinkle in the early rounds, and you could just feel all the history when you entered the building.
You talk about the combination of class and class. I can't think of a better example than Jim Nance calling the game, Coach K coaching Duke, this is going to be his last run. What a contribution, not only to sports and especially basketball, than Coach K has made over the years. He has done it with, extreme talent, but also a lot of dignity.
Well said, Bob, about Coach K. And I have to tell you, my career has really paralleled the Coach K's years at Duke in this respect. In 1986, my first experience broadcasting the Final Four was as the host, if you will, the pregame, the halftime, the postgame host from the studio that was built inside of the arena. That was a Louisville National Championship under Denny Crum. And that was Coach K's first Final Four team. That was the Johnny Dawkins team with Jay Billis and Mark Allery and David Henderson and Tommy Amaker. And so Coach K's first Final Four for Duke was my first Final Four. And then 5 years later, I took over for Brent Musburger as the play-by-play voice of the NCAA tournament, working alongside Billy. And Coach K's first national championship was my first national championship game, calling it. So I've had all these experiences. I've called all five of his national championships, and now here he is. This is the biggest storyline going into this year's tournament, is how far can Duke go? Is it possible that Coach K gets to go all the way to the championship game and maybe even win it like Al McGuire did years and years ago back in 1977 when he took Marquette to the national title in Atlanta and then stepped down? But any way you slice it, Mike's effect and legacy, he's one of the iconic figures in the history of coaching, not just college basketball. And I'm just anxious to see what the final chapter will bring.
Yeah, Jim, and the his presence and that team's play will definitely be they're going to be a major player again. You know, you had late in February, you had an unprecedented 7 of the top 10 AP teams lose on the same day. I mean, you've got what appears to be, as we head into the start of March Madness, yeah, you've got your Dukes and your some of your other blue bloods, but it's wide open in many ways, Jim.
Boy, you're right. That weekend on it was actually the day was Saturday, February 26th, and the top six teams, and you're right, 7 of the top 10 lost on the same day, including 1 through 6. And I just thought that really set up this year's NCAA tournament. You said it so well. This is, you go in always with the knowledge that the Cinderella lives inside this event more than any other sporting event in this country. And that's really a big part of the appeal of March Madness, is that are these upsets, is the little guy's story. And to see that day happen a few weeks back, to know that you're going into the NCAA tournament and it's such a level playing field, my goodness. And then you factor in the fact we have crowds for the first time in 3 years back restored to the way it used to be. It's set up to be just a fabulous NCAA tournament.
When you did your first Masters, it was 1986. Obviously, everyone knows that was Jack's sixth green jacket. To this day, easily the greatest Masters ever played. And Ken Venturi had some very wise words for you after the conclusion of that 86 Masters. Could you share that with our listeners?
I was on the 16th hole for what was my first Masters, and Jack made a pivotal birdie on Sunday, a birdie that would tie the lead. He would then, of course, take the lead at 17 with another birdie. I said the bear has come out of hibernation. And anyway, I stayed in my perch until the broadcast ended, and now I'm walking back, not riding in a cart. I'm walking back from down at 16 all the way to the CBS compound, which is, I'd say, better part of 3/4 mile away. And all of a sudden, the golf cart comes racing up next alongside, and it was Ken Venturi in the cart. And he said, Jimmy, you heading back to the compound? I said, yes, sir, Mr. Venturi. He said, jump in, I'll give you a ride. He said, how old are you, young man? And I said, I'm 26, sir. I was just raised in a yes, sir, no, sir, out of environment, you know, with my mom and dad, my Charlotte, North Carolina upbringing. And he said, I'm going to make a prediction. Kenny was just so euphoric. He was just downright giddy what he had just watched and broadcast. Jack's historic sixth green jacket. He said, someday you're going to live to see 50 of these masters. You're going to broadcast 50 of these. And I thought, wow, that's a profound statement to make. I'm just hoping to be invited back for year two. And he said, but I can promise you this, son, you will never see a Masters bigger than this. And there were a whole lot of things that I took out of that. Number one, he called me Jimmy, which was what my mom and dad and all my wife, my closest friends have always called me Jimmy. My dad was Jim, Big Jim, and I was Jimmy. So there was a closeness with the way he said that. And he called me son, which was very paternal. And at the same time, he thought, I guess I had enough ability. He made this proclamation that I would work 50 Masters. And then there was a little bit of a downer. I have to admit that he said I would never live to see another Masters as great as this. I thought it's all downhill. But my head was spinning after this, that Venturi had been so kind and had made these projections. And I went back to the compound, sitting in the cart with Ken, and I walked up to Frank Cherkinian, the legendary founder of Golf Television, and I thanked him for the chance to be a part of the tapestry of this historic broadcast. And I asked him if I had done everything all right, and half apologized for saying that Bear had come out of hibernation, because in my mind, somebody must have already said that somewhere on the broadcast. I didn't know where that came from, how that landed in my brain. And I thought if I had repeated something that maybe had been said down at 10 by Bob Murphy or 11 and 12 by Steve Melnick or Weisskopf or somebody on one of the early holes, that wouldn't be so cool to repeat it. So I said, hey, on that line, I said, Mr. Cherkinian, a bear has come out of hibernation. I think I maybe, you know, repeated something that had been said. He said, no, son, only you. Only you. It was a great line. Now get the hell out of here. And you're coming back next year. You know, Frank had this rough, tough love kind of a guy. But, man, what a mentor he was, just like Ken was to me. And, my goodness, how fortunate and blessed I've been back every year since. And this will be Masters number 37 for me in 3 weeks' time.
You'll get to 50, Jim.
You know what? I want to get to 51, Kelly. I was telling that story at an event in Los Angeles about 10 years ago. I was getting an award, and as bizarre as this sounds, Venturi was my co-presenter with Jack Whitaker. I mean, it was an honor. They were presenting me for this award. And I got to have told the story about that first encounter with Ken that meant so much to me. And later that night, we were sitting around having a nightcap, and Mr. Whitaker said, now here are these two men, both who are now passed on, and I delivered the eulogy at both of their funerals. But Jack Whitaker looked at me and said, I heard what you said up there about 50 Masters. He said, that was interesting. I said, really? What did you take note of? He says, it's not the right number for you, Jimmy. I said, why is that? He says, you need to do 51. I said, well, why is that? He says, because if you do the math on it, the 51st Masters for you will be the 100th playing of the Masters tournament. And when the Masters turns 100, you need to be there, and Augusta needs you to be there. I thought, whoa, okay. So let's realign my goals, my career goals. It was a powerful thing. And he took the Venturi original line and added to it. And I got to tell you, that has always been the thing that's been in the back of my mind. What do I want to do with this business? Well, I want longevity. I want to be able to have the scope and perspective to see things for about that amount of time. And that's all I've ever wanted. I don't desire anything. I'm grateful for everything I've had. I don't long or desire anything. I'm grateful for having the events that I do have.
Wow.
In closing, being grateful for what you have and that scope and that perspective that you mentioned, if if you don't mind maybe taking a shot at this as we project ahead, are you willing to maybe give a favorite that you have in mind to win the NCAA men's basketball tournament, and someone who you think might be slipping on the green jacket in April?
Wow. You talking about putting me on the spot, but Kelly, I've got to say that I think Gonzaga has enough parts back from last year's national runner-up team, including Drew Timmy, to be able to be there on Monday night in New Orleans. The storybook finish would be Coach K and Duke, and they definitely have that ability too. So I'm not going to go out on a limb, although I will say my alma mater, the University of Houston, plays great defense, and they will be a tough out. They made it to the Final Four last year, so that would be very cool. Now, when you get to Augusta, my goodness, I mean, where do you go with that? And we're learning as this year goes on that we're getting a whole slew of first-time winners and more people who are credentialed and have the ability to win. You know, it's easy to be able to go with a Morikawa or a John Rahm, you know, the big stars of the game, but it's so widened out. It's so much broader at the upper echelon of the sport now. It's not 10 guys, it's 50 guys. I'll go Patrick Cantlay. I just like his game. He's got a classical way about him. I could see that. Now I'm going to go off a guy that played well on the West Coast and won, and that was Scottie Scheffler. He won at Phoenix. He's young. He's gotten his first win. I've seen his track record in major events. He's always done well. So that's a bit of a dark horse, if you will. But he's going to be a huge factor in the years to come. So maybe it starts in April.
Well, that's terrific. Jim, I can't thank you enough. And Bob, I'm going to turn it over to you to send off our good friend Jim Nance.
Thanks, Kelly.
Well, thank you, Kelly. And, you know, Jim, listening to you talk, I'm like a fan. I mean, you make everything sound so good.
Right back at you, pal.
Well, thanks for taking this time out, Jim. And, you know, have a lot of fun at the NCAAs. We hope to see you down at Augusta. And continued success as you march towards number 51.
Today, there are smarter phones, smarter cars, smarter everything. So Bridgestone Golf's engineers thought, why not a smarter golf ball? Introducing the new Tour B, with a smart reactive IQ cover that delivers more power off your driver, more control off your wedges. Try Bridgestone's new Tour B with reactive IQ cover. The smarter tour ball.
You know, Bob, I think what you said leading into that interview with Jim is so true. I've always found Jim to be incredibly sincere and a kind person in so many ways. And I think that's what served him so well, in addition to just a tremendous passion that he has for seemingly any game that he calls, no matter the sport.
Yeah, no doubt about it. I'm just hoping that his memory stays real sharp during that interview. You know, I reminded him that he's a host of one of the great parties every year out at Pebble Beach. and I said, you know, I'd love to be invited. And he said, Bob, you're going to be the first guest. So yeah. I think once the calendar rolls into January 1st, I'm going to be dropping weekly reminders to Mr. Nance. Invitation hasn't come yet, Jim, but I know you promised me.
Oh, you know he'll come through, because that, more than anything else, will be at the top of his list for 2023. Hey, Bob, Happy New Year to you and to Janice Self, our fabulous executive producer, and Happy New Year to everyone out there. Let's hope that, that 2023 is a terrific year. Looking forward to having many more fun times talking between the two of us with some great guests and some great storytelling.
Couldn't say it any better. Happy New Year, everybody that listens to Musings on Sports.